Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
One request. 16 folks who do not share my priorities. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. How is everybody doing? I hope this Friday is fantastic. I keep updating the math, and I thank everybody. 9 states, 60 sticks, and that's even changing. So I don't know. I talk, and then they tell me, dude, you're saying the wrong number. So I just want to thank everybody for making that possible. Dan and David and everybody listening and all the affiliates and everybody, very groovy. Thank y'all. I said I got one request from 16 folks who do not share my priorities, and that is the current 14 athletic directors in the Southeastern Conference and the two incoming ADs, OU and Texas. Dan, is that Joe Castiglione? Is that the guy at OU?
Yes, it is.
And then it's Del Conte who...
CDC, you got it.
I'll give Texas credit. They understand the checkbook. Now, they don't always make the right choice, but they went to TCU. Like, I talk all the time, hi, we're here for your defensive coordinator. They're like, coach, we're here for the guy running the thing. We're here for your athletic director. And TCU looked at him and went, okay. That's the power of the Longhorns. So Chris Del Conte's down there in his shiny suits, and he's a mocker. I mean, he is I'm a big fan of Chris Del Conte. So they got it squared away, man. They know what it is. And when I say they know what it is, they know what operating in the highest realm of big-time college athletics is. Not always winning titles, but that's where they operate. Even Texas, when it wasn't so super-duper in particular seasons, they had their own network. Not even Big 12 network. They had, like, their network. So I'm going to include them in this because the schedule change, it is a-coming. In fact, I have said I have bet Dan's pension on this.
Oh, don't do that.
It will be it will be 9 games, the 3-6, and boom, there you go. So my request, when essentially you take the schedules that have been in place and operating this way since at least 2012, for some people, the biggest disruption when Missouri and Texas A&M started play was, wait a minute, we got to play on the road twice? And that is real. You know, you've got a home and home every year, you know, with an opponent you play every single year. And you're like, why are we going there twice? And that happened 2 times. Auburn hosted Georgia 2 years in a row. And then there was another team that it got flipped around to, and it never got fixed. So, and we will move on. That will be lost to the sands of time. That slate will not be equal because now we're expanding to 16. And when we expand to 16, that part we know. What we all suspect, and it would be a real surprise if Sankey and whomever else has a, you know, their fingers in the pie, it would be a real surprise if the SEC does not go to the 9th game. Now, divide the 9, whatever you want to do. But it would be a giant surprise if that's not how this goes, going to 9 games. And my request from me to the athletic directors all around the conference is SEC programs who now have you've been planning. When I say this has been in place since 2012, you've been planning for 8-4, 8-4, 8 conference games, 4 non-conference, 8-4, 8-4. You're now going to be 9-3, which means you are replacing a non-conference opponent. And for SEC programs when it comes to non-conference opponents you have a choice about, Florida and Florida State, they're playing the game. SEC programs, as we now shift from what is already in place for the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years, all 8 conference games they'll rotate on, and then our non-conference slate, we've carved that thing in stone. We've signed contracts. We've sent advance checks. We've done all this stuff. And now we're having to change it. If, for instance, I'm Ole Miss, I already have my 2024 entire season set. I know I'm playing 8 SEC games. I can even know who they are. But I know there's 8. Even if I didn't know, do we play Kentucky? Even if you don't know who they are, you know you're playing 8, and you know that you have access to 4 non-conference games. And you look at Starkville and go, all right, well, they're in the conference and they're in our division, so that's not an issue. So we really have 4 non-conference games to play. And my request, because like Georgia doesn't really have 4, they have 3. Kentucky doesn't really have 4, they have 3. When we all go from this 8 conference, 4 non-conference to 9 conference, 3 non, I need SEC programs. I need the additional conference game to replace the worst non-conference opponent that you have a choice about, not the best. I need you to not look at your future opponents and go, hey, we're having to add a conference game, so let's take off this pretty good non-conference opponent that we have a choice about. Now, specifically, when I say you have a choice about, specifically, I am saying for the 10 current SEC programs and their athletic directors, not named Kentucky, UF, South Carolina, and I will include Georgia, even in the imbalance of that in-state rivalry. Because I am going to sort of let you off the hook. Think about this. You've been operating, and I'll stay with Ole Miss. Just, I picked a team that does not have a non-conference team it has to play every year. It spun the wheel, landed in Oxford. Imagine that in Ole Miss, hey, this is a giant adjustment. We've always had 8 conference games and 4 non that we really do get to choose on our own, and we can schedule however we want. And bully for you, Ole Miss. And sometimes it's been Florida State down in Jacksonville or Orlando, wherever you played them. Sometimes you've come to Atlanta and played a really good Boise team. Sometimes you stayed at home and played Jacksonville State. But you're an SEC program, and you do not have – it's not like you have this rivalry with Michigan. And like Michigan and Ole Miss have opened this every year since 1904. No. The math in Oxford has always been 8 conference games and then 4 we get to choose. I am not about to look at a team. I'll stay with Kentucky. Kentucky, who has always looked at Ole Miss and gone, well, we have 8 conference games, a Power 5 opponent we have to play every year, and then we only get 3. And now you're going to add, and I'm just going to pick a team. Now you're going to add Arkansas. So we have Louisville, Arkansas, and now 2 non-conference games. Imagine the vice tightening around Lexington. So I'm going to give them a pass. Down in Gainesville, people in Gainesville, you look at like Knoxville and say you don't have the giant out-of-state non-conference that you have to play. We do. And sometimes you go to Tallahassee or they come here and it is a bone to be chewed. So we've never enjoyed the 8 and 4. It's always been 8 and 3 and then that bunch. And so imagine looking at Florida. That's why I'm saying I'm letting them off the hook. Because they've always already had FSU. Now I'm just going to pick somebody. They get Mississippi State and 2 non-conference games. It's the same thing as if you went to Oxford and said, you only get 2 non-conference games now. Whoa, wait a minute. I thought we had 3. So I'm letting you off the hook. And even for UGA, that's on tech. You need to start being competitive. Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, Kentucky. You schedule, because you now have essentially 2 non-conference games. You schedule whatever you want to schedule. Now, I'm going to say at the FBS level, And I don't care how G5 it is. It can be San Jose State if you want. But just stay out of FCS. Just don't do it. Don't go there. Even if they're a good FCS team, don't do that, even those four. But you can cherry pick the one-off, whatever it is, and you can go money whip somebody every offseason. You can wait and see what a team looks like and go, hey, we'll give you 1.2 to come visit. And you can schedule a victory, but let it be an FBS team. That's all I'm saying. I don't care which one. All right, for the other 10, you need to play schedule catch-up, and for a bunch of reasons. First of all, fans, let's not be silly, but the resume, because a loss doesn't kill you in any way nearly like even like the final 4 months of this year is the last time that you're looking at a loss going, that one may sting. Next year, the ability to get rewarded for simply playing an opponent, it gains ground on beating that opponent. Playing the number 7 team in America and losing, it is gaining ground quickly on playing the number 7 and, hey, we beat them. So I'm going to finish this. I'm going to stay with – there are so many – man, you just don't want to do it. And I'm going to stay with Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a team – they're a program that has always enjoyed, because they play Mississippi State. They're in the division, for gosh sakes. Not even like Tennessee that goes, this isn't fair. And I look at Tennessee and go, yeah, you're right. Because they have to play, we got to play Alabama every single year. I don't like that. So there are real gripes. Now, my response is, yes, that's a real gripe. Now wipe your nose and, you know, figure it out. But for Ole Miss, doesn't exist. Mississippi State, they're in the division. So if you look at Ole Miss, and this year is this year, 2024, this schedule is about to change because Ole Miss, and by the way, you talk about knowing how you get to success. If we look ahead of, because 2023, I mean, if you don't have your schedule set, you got an issue. But for 2024, it has not been unusual in the past to be a year and a half out and still have a open date. Ole Miss, if you look at the next 6 seasons, 5 of them already have all 4 non-conference opponents determined. 2027, they do have one opening. But I'm going to use next season because that's what Ole Miss has been operating for decades with 8-4. All right, 8-4. So let's talk about the 4 for 2024, because when Ole Miss signed all these contracts, they didn't know that it was about to be 9-3. And then they were going to have to pick somebody non-conference and delete them. Ole Miss non-conference slate that is already signed and in place. I can give you dates it's going to be played. 2024. Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, Georgia Southern. And before you say, no, Wake Forest is good, because Wake Forest is a good team. They're not a great team, and they really shouldn't push you. You're not only SEC, but you're Ole Miss in the SEC. Respect to the Demon Deacons, Ole Miss is way better. And should be, like, whenever you, whatever year you pick. But even if you want to say, no, Wake Forest, they're good, that contract was signed in October of 2014. Do you know why Wake Forest was signed to a contract? Because the powers that be in Oxford looked yonder Winston-Salem and saw that I'll pick the 5 years leading up to that. Let's see, we need a non-conference opponent that's a little bit of a name, and they are Power 5 because we want to check that box. Who do we have? What's Wake Forest been doing? Well, they're 5-7, 3-9, 6-7, 5-7, 4-8, 3-9. That'll do. That's who they signed. I cannot have Ole Miss drop Wake Forest when they get another SEC opponent added. Furman, Middle Tennessee, and hey, we added another SEC team. Florida saying, yeah, we've added an ACC team forever. So, folks, I spun the wheel. It landed on Oxford. This is their non-conference slate, and I will bet you a dollar to a donut that their plan is to call Winston-Salem and go, hey, about that 2-game series. That would be wrong for so many reasons. We're going to break. Continue on. It's Friday next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
big fan, Billy Napier. And I graduated, and I even donate money to another SEC school. But I've said Florida is one of those, there's a very small handful of programs. It's a more authentic feeling season when Florida's really good. So I want that for him. I don't want to be Billy Napier right now. I don't want to be walking on the same side of the street he's walking on. I don't want to be whistling the tune he's whistling. I don't want to be, this is not a good thing in Gainesville right now, because Kirby has built Godzilla and Rodan in Athens. And Billy Napier has said he scoured 20 quarterbacks, and Graham Mertz is the guy he identified. I don't want to be there. And then you talk about the schedule, who I was open to that they've always had Florida State. And now you're going to drop another SEC game on him. And by the way, everybody, we can't rush to the front of the line fast enough to load up Florida's three permanent opponents. How about Georgia, Alabama, and LSU? And Florida's looking around going, what? And they have Florida State. So that's what that is. Want to welcome. Oh, yeah, by the way, then they got the season coming up. I want to welcome on right now a guy who he knows about all of this stuff. We've had him on before when it comes to TV, podcast, Gators Breakdown, et cetera. He knows what's going on in Gainesville. It's David Waters. David, welcome back, brother. How are you today?
I'm good, Chuck. There's a moniker on Gators Breakdown. There's never a dull moment in Gator Nation. I think you just described it pretty good, and Florida's fighting that right now through spring practice.
Like I said, to me, Notre Dame, I like Texas, Southern Cal, I need you to be good so my season feels right. It is like I had a Florida fan, and I talked about this on maybe Monday or Tuesday. He's like, well, how can we catch Georgia? And I literally, David, I looked at him, and I said, you can't, not this season. I was like, you're not doing the same stuff Georgia's doing right now. So you and I, because we're fans and coaches, and we're not coaches, we're not players. Let's talk about what you think the actual goal and what is attainable at the end of November. What do you think this season will have been for Florida? Because I don't have very high expectations here.
Yeah, not many people do, Chuck. And I think when you get to November, if you're a Gator fan, you're looking at, I think, first and foremost, for maybe signs of improvement, hey, Florida's got to turn around and start beating teams they're supposed to beat. You've got to beat your Vanderbilts. You got to beat South Carolina, Missouri, Kentucky on a more, consistent basis now since 2018. They've been a thorn in Florida's side, some close games, yeah. and some times when Kentucky's beat Florida, And so I think first and foremost, for Billy Napier, is just getting those games you're supposed to win against the programs you're supposed to be better than on a more consistent basis, winning those games. And look, rivalries come into it as well. And as you said, Florida's far behind Georgia right now. But, maybe looking at Florida State, maybe looking at LSU, those were some tight games last year, as bad as Florida was, so some ball, some bounces of the ball go your way against LSU and against Tennessee, your rivals, you want to see maybe go 500 against your rivals and beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And if you see that, that's going to be a remarkably improved season for Billy Napier. Open up with Utah again, but as we saw last year, even a win week one versus Utah doesn't mean Florida's going to go on to have a good season. So you'll take that win, don't get me wrong, but we'll have to see how the season plays out. And I think the first couple of things you look for is how Florida's going to perform against those rivals and then beat the teams they're supposed to beat.
David, I'm gonna tell you what I really love, and this is, if you remember the movie Apollo 13, where like back in Houston they finally was like, all right, what's right with the ship? Like, tell us what's working on the ship. And Tom Hanks was like, well, a fan's working and we got some tape. I love the running back room, and I mean at an elite level. I'm the biggest ETN fan. Like, his mama doesn't like him as a running back as much as I do. And Montrell, and they're deep, and they're diverse, and they got a lot. They got numbers. Once we get out of the running back room, there's not a whole lot that, like, I want to anchor myself to. And, again, so that's the whole backdrop. I looked at Graham Mertz, and I said, you have to be Johnny Manziel or Cam or Tebow to overcome the fact that I really love your running backs and not much else. Am I missing anything there about either Graham Mertz or another unit that you can really lean on?
I think if we stay with the offense, I think just because of this staff's reputation, I still think you can go offensive line. And, you know, to follow a storyline there, last night, Micah Mazuka, the big transfer from Baylor, announced that he was going to transfer. Again, he just come in and announced that he was going to transfer, put himself back in the portal. Well, it was noticed overnight that that tweet has since been deleted. And now it's coming out this morning that maybe that was a heat-of-the-moment type of tweet and that the plan for now is to stay at Florida. So, you know, just within 12 hours or so, 12, 14 hours, you know, it's been a roller coaster of emotions for one of the biggest transfers Florida brought in. But word is he's injured anyway. So he may miss the rest of spring and, you know, somebody you're counting on to plug and play right there along the offensive line at left guard. But I still think with this Billy Napier, Rob Sale, Darnell Stapleton reputation for building strong offensive lines and run games at Louisiana, we saw it last year at Florida too. I still think you point to offensive line as, you know, the running game as a whole. As I think that's a positive there for Gators. But when you start talking quarterback, hey, Graham Mertz is going to need that running game. He's going to need that offensive line, you know, because I don't think I agree with you. I don't think he's good enough to carry the offense, not from what I've seen at Wisconsin. And look, two things can be true at one time. I do think he was held back a bit by that Wisconsin offense. But at the same time, and I think we'll get our answer this fall, was he holding back the Wisconsin offense? You know, did they not have the trust in him to open up the offense? So that's a question that's worth throwing out there, and we'll get our answer this fall. So I know Gator fans on that side of it are looking at, hey, can this offense be a better fit for him? Can a more consistent run game and, you know, maybe better athletes on the perimeter open up his game, being more in the shotgun instead of under center? You know, can those unlock some of his traits that will excel this offense? So the run game, I think, will help him, but there's going to be times where the game is on his shoulders. Can he make a play? And that's, I think that, you know, we're still waiting to see that when he plays this fall. So yeah, I get the hesitation with the quarterback position led by Graham Mertz, given what we saw at Wisconsin, and asking ourselves the question: can it translate to better performance at Florida?
Go on Twitter, GatorDave_SEC, the Gators Breakdown podcast. And if you down around Jacksonville, you can see him on TV as well. David, I appreciate you making time, amigo.
Hey Chuck, thank you so much.
David Waters, Gators Breakdown. I'm telling you, there's no fan base in the SEC, I don't think. Because, like, Auburn fans realize, oh, we got to play Georgia and Bama. I don't think there's a fan base in the SEC looking around or even a program going, wait a minute, everybody, look at our schedule. Who are you going to put us on three permanent opponents? And so, waiting on Sankey to announce that.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states, 66. Thank y'all for the blessing. LSU, this is you do it in Florida and Louisiana and some other places. Bad weather tonight. We're going to move a game. So LSU baseball, they've got a guy pitching today against Arkansas. It's like a giant series. He's undefeated in a zero. He's like zero. And so, by golly, he's pitching. And it's supposed to be maybe raining like sideways tonight at 7. So they decided let's have the game early. And SEC Network is currently running like their update show, SEC Now, that they run like 7 times in the morning. Instead of running the Arkansas-LSU baseball game, And the LSU release, this is funny, will be on the internet until about the third inning. They were clearly not happy with this. They said SEC Network Plus. So then the baseball series will start. It's a huge, huge, huge deal right now, what's going on baseball there. But our next guest, we're going to talk football with him. We'll get to Baton Rouge and just, you know what, I think we'll start there now. I want to welcome in Mi Amigo, Sports Talk 790. He's one of the Maccas out there in Houston and just a really good guy. And he knows stuff when it comes to the SEC as well, I've heard. Chris Gordy, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Chuck. You know, it's funny. You reminded me of, programming and preempting. When the Longhorn Network airs their graduations, you know you're really star for programming out there. So glad the Longhorn Network's going to be going away here real soon.
Exactly. And I was like, well, so they moved the time up, and SEC Network, I was like, this is like a gift to them. And they're like, no, we've got one more episode of SEC Now we need to get through, and then we'll jump in about the third inning. And I read the statement from LSU. I was like, all right, good for you. All right, let's talk. Actually, I want to start in College Station, because here's the funny thing to me. There's conversation, and I think it's legit, and we played the Jimbo stuff from earlier in the week about calling plays and all that. See, Bobby Petrino, I think he's one of the five best offensive minds in football, and the combination of plays he comes up with to call, he's amazing. We have legit hesitation about him calling plays and if it's going to happen. Like, isn't Daryl Dickey looking around going, and you think I was in charge of the offense? Like, what did I do to get fired?
Yeah, and that's what's so funny about it is, you know, it's the SEC's like a reality show, right? I mean, we're all – my wife watches all the housewife shows and trashy TV, and there's so many, segments of the SEC where it is kind of it's kind of a vice. Like, I think there's a lot of people on the outside, the periphery, saying, man, I hope this blows up between Jimbo and Bobby Petrino. And, you know, obviously earlier this week with Jimbo's comments, who's calling the plays? I mean, yeah, we'll figure all that out. You know, it's like, come on, man, just say I'm handing over the reins and the controls to Bobby Petrino and it's his offense. It probably is. It probably will be that, but I keep looking on the flip side, Chuck. What if this works? And you're right. Bobby Petrino is a great offensive mind. Man, he's going to have the best talent he's ever had. You know, Connor Wegman showed some real signs down the stretch of last season. You get Evan Stewart back. You get Moose Muhammad back and Anaya Smith. I mean, this is an offense that could be very explosive this year. And so, yeah, while everybody's pointing at A&M and kind of hoping this thing blows up and drama and all this, there's a good chance that this offense rebounds and this team rebounds this year.
Here's the overall point. We're going to go to Baton Rouge now. Here's the overall point. If I said, hey, give me some true freshman offensive linemen who have started in the SEC and really excelled, you could name four or five, because we all know it was Cam Robinson and Jonah. There's like, we all know the same four or five who are the exceptions. The funny thing was, last year we looked at Will Campbell and we go, you struggled. Dude's playing left tackle in the SEC with a non-conference game against Florida State. And it quickly went from how impressive and man-child he is in spring and August to he's a true freshman, he's learning. There's a little bit of an EKG. Tell me on whole right now, what does LSU have in Will Campbell?
Oh, he's a stud. I mean, he is him and Emory Jones, the right tackle. I know Will gets a little bit more hype and attention because he's the left tackle, and that's the most important spot. But both those guys, I mean, look, for Brian Kelly to start bookend tackles as true freshmen in the SEC, I think everybody in Baton Rouge is just collectively holding their breath going, oh, God, I hope this works out. And it did. You know, did they have their growing pains? Yes. But, man, the Alabama game was one that stood out to me. The fact that they were going up against such big-time guys like Will Anderson and Dallas Turner, and they basically held their own. And, look, having a Jaden Daniels who has mobility helps because he's able to roll out of the pocket and tuck it and run when he has to. So that helped. But, man, the sky's the limit for both these guys, particularly Will Campbell. If they keep playing at the level they played this past year and keep progressing, both Campbell and Emory Jones, I mean, they'll both be on the All-American watch list. And, you know, Will Campbell's got a chance to be a high, you know, first-round draft pick in a couple of years if he keeps playing at this level. So, yeah, kudos to Brian Kelly. He took a chance. It worked out. And now they've got two of their biggest, you know, when all these other teams are looking around and trying to figure out, like Tennessee yesterday, they're like, yeah, is it the kid coming up from Miami? Is he going to be our left tackle? Is it one of the guys you already have? LSU's already got the hardest part figured out. They know who their tackles are, and they can build from there.
There are times, and I'm older than you, but I remember watching Howie Long with the Raiders, and I was like, he can play any one of about seven positions. Like Carlos Dansby, if you remember him at Auburn, I was like, I think he can literally play 9 of the 11 positions. sometimes you get an elite guy like that and you take advantage of it. What about Harold Perkins? Are they going to monkey around with his production? Because he's an inside guy now, I understand, and he's elite and can probably do everything. But isn't there a best spot? Like, you're going to play the run around and be Harold Perkins position. That's what I want him to play.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen is that they think he's more, you know, strong side backer this year, that, you know, running sideline to sideline. I think you'll still see examples of him, you know, rushing the passer and getting after it and that sort of thing. But I think they want to use his strengths, and his strengths are, man, that speed from sideline to sideline. I think we're going to see way, you know, we saw so much of Harold Perkins last year. We're going to see even more this year, because I thought some of those games down the stretch last year, A&M said, what side is Harold Perkins on? Let's go away from him. You know, and they kind of game plan that way. I think we're going to see more hat to the ball play with Harold Perkins this year, where he's going to be going more sideline to sideline, closing in on ball carriers and still getting after pass rushers or quarterbacks occasionally with the pass rush. But I think we're going to see a more complete Harold Perkins with this play this year.
Wrapping up, Chris Gordy, PD, on-air host, Sports Talk 790 out there in Houston. And we talk SEC, mostly the West with him. He could do it all. But we talk SEC West mostly. Will Rogers, you and I, we're not on the air right now. We're sitting at Hooters. We're having some wings. And we're just talking football. And, like, an ad comes up for Mississippi State season opener. What are you thinking, like, just top of mind, you blurted out about Will Rogers now that it ain't that system anymore? And I'm not trying to minimize him, but this isn't the 6-yard slant or the bubble tunnel. What is your just top of mind reaction about what Will Rogers can be now?
Well, I think I'll just be honest. I don't think he's going to lead the SEC in passing. I don't think he's going to be one of the leaders in the country in passing yards this year. And that's no knock on him. I just think they're going to try to be way more balanced. You're going to see more running attack. I was going back and looking at Kevin Barbe and some of the plays, you know, the offense that they ran last year at App State, and just kind of trying to get a read on what they want to do. And App State ran a high flying offense last year. Don't get me wrong, but I think they're just going to be a little bit more measured. I think Zach Arnett wants to be a team that's strong defense, runs the ball, and has that passing attack. So I think you're going to see a more, you know, not the gunslinger Will Rogers, but maybe a guy who just, you know, makes the smart throws, and they're a little bit more balanced, more 50-50 running the football and throwing the football than that Mike Leach air raid system. So it's going to look different. I don't think it's any knock on Will Rogers. I think he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC, but I do think that those numbers come way down this year. He's not throwing for 4,000 yards and 35 touchdowns this year.
All right, and then as maybe the dessert is coming at Hooters, an Auburn fan walks up and says, hey, I've been on a Mormon mission the past 2 years. Tell me about Robbie Ashford. What do you just – not on the air, what do you blurt? Is he our quarterback? What do you think about Robbie Ashford? What do you blurt?
Man, I say, go look at the transfer portal and see who else is out there. I still think Auburn made a tremendous mistake not going – to the portal, bringing somebody in. Remember, you know, LSU last year, they had Miles Brennan, Garrett Nussmeier. They still went out and got Jaden Daniels. I for Hugh Freeze being the great offensive mind he is, I am shocked that they came in this spring with just Ashford, TJ Finley, and Holden Garner. I think they still will look to the portal come May 1st and find a kid out there and bring him in. He may not be the starter. It may still be Ashford. But, man, they needed somebody to come in and push him. And TJ Finley's not the guy. So, Robbie Ashford, look, I would just put this with all of friends. I wouldn't be running out to go buy a number 9 jersey just yet. He may not be the guy this year.
Last place I want to ask you about is Ole Miss. And, you know, I a couple of months ago when I looked at who they were going to get in the portal, you know, we did a little retrospective because, remember, Ole Miss going back to, like, Jeremiah Masoli and Jevon Snead, like, they're the quarterback transfer OG. And I'm looking at this year's, and I'm like, but can any of this year's group play? Like, can any of these guys really play? Because I got numbers now. Walker Howard, I don't know because he's never been on the field, really. These other two guys have played some, and I'm like, it's great that you have a bunch of them. Somebody's got to be able to play.
Yeah, I keep going back and forth. You know, I, a few weeks ago, I convinced myself, even with them bringing in Spencer Sanders and Walker Howard, I thought, you know what, Dart still knows the system well, you know, the best. I think it's going to be Dart. I heard Greg McElroy make a case yesterday that it is going to be Spencer Sanders, and the argument is a good one. Why would this guy, a senior who played 4 years at Oklahoma State, was an all Big 12 quarterback, why would he go to Oxford just to compete and potentially lose a quarterback battle? So, yeah, man, I think it's going to be Spencer Sanders when it's all said and done. But when I look around that room, Chuck, they don't have the receivers, the receiver talent they've had the last couple of years. They're looking at a bunch of young guys that they're asking to step up, and what do we have in you? And they got some seniors, but inexperienced seniors at the receiver spots. So I just wonder, do they have all the playmakers? We know how good Quinshon Judkins is in the backfield, but I'm just curious how good whoever the starting quarterback is, whether it's Sanders or Dart, do they have all the pieces around them to run the high-flying Lane Kiffin system? And I just have my doubts right now.
Chris, it's always great to catch up with you, man. I always appreciate the input. We will do it again soon, brother. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Well, appreciate Chris Gordy coming on. We got Ryan Fowler now coming up a little later in the program, and we'll certainly be all over what's going on in Tuscaloosa. And so I kind of wanted to bounce around, hit most of the SEC West. Other than that, again, we've got Ryan Fowler coming on in hour two. David Lake as well from Inside the U, talking Miami as they continue to work their way towards the 2023 season. I've right and wrong about plenty of stuff, like everybody, but man, we were on this early. That transfer portal, I was like, quality, there's still going to be somebody going 15-0 or 14-1 or 13-2. The quality of, like, the actual play-by-play execution, like, somebody still wins and loses every game. Quality of the play is about to go down. And so Mario Cristobal is a real good example of, he might have done plenty of things right last year, and it was a bad product, especially on defense. So Mario is, I think he is the poster child for the portal and the dangers and the sloppiness of play at times, and that there are also fan bases who, at least after last year, you know what we saw more than anything? And Mario was one of them. But I think Mario is as good an example as you can find. What we saw last year, and actually, I guess I'll even go back 2 years ago, Billy Napier had one. Billy Napier is about to have another one. The year zero concept. All right, this is year one, so you start to get your system. And there are so many examples where we kind of look around now, step back and go, hang on now. This might actually be like a year zero. There is so much upheaval. Timmy Chang last year, you know, you don't just 85 guys on the team. You have more than that. You can, but like at Hawaii, they don't have a whole lot of extra money for grants and whatever else. And so at Ohio State, you can be a walk-on, or like Nebraska was famously. That's not the truth. That's not what it is at Hawaii. You kind of got 85 scholarship players, and you hope to fill them, and maybe you don't. But Timmy Chang last year, taking over that program, I think he had 54 players who had never played a down for Hawaii. Like week one, I think there were 54 of the 85 were new, or 56 maybe? Might have been 56. That's not, I was going to say that's not normal. It's not doable. It's not organizable. Is there a coach listening right now? I'm 85 kids, and you walk up and go, all right, none of y'all know anybody. There's a chance that you had two of your offensive linemen who already knew each other from either like Fresno State or Colorado or somewhere, and nobody else on the offensive line knew each other. Like, you had two guys from the mainland who happened to show up. Oh, you transferred here too? Like, in the secondary, you could be introducing yourself. Oh, we played together at Hawaii 2 years ago. That's right, yeah. Then we transferred. It could happen. It's not organizable. I don't know if that's a word. It's not organizable. Like, what's the herding cats? So, Mario Cristobal, that's the biggest thing for him right now. There is a year zero concept. When you look, can you look at a coach and go, I know it's 50 new kids, but win right now? And he's like, what? Somebody is going to win, and so it can still be you, but there seems to be more of an understanding of it's a year zero thing. Now, at Hawaii, like when you don't have budget or whatever, that's different. At Miami, that shocked me. I was expecting it at South Carolina, and it didn't happen. Brian Harsin, I thought that that wasn't year zero. So that is a fairly new concept, and it's fully embraced by some fan bases. Really surprised me. If I was a Miami fan, I would acknowledge to Mario, yeah, I know what it is, and I need you to figure it out somehow. Billy Napier right now, if I'm a Florida fan, I was like, absolutely, I get it, man. In fact, here, fist bump. Yeah, I got you, dog. All right, now figure it out. Like, I'm not going to cuss you. I'm not even going to get angry. But I need you to figure it out. Those are always my three words. I was looking at an athletic director. I'm like, I know it's tough, and you've got to overcome this, and what about the – I figure it out, man. You got no choice. Because if you are as a coach or an AD of a program that goes 4-8, if you're a 4-8 program, 5-7 program, we won 6-6, we get to – no, I may fire you. If you go 4-8, 5-7, 6-6, I may fire you after the 6-6. Like you beat whoever in the season finale. 6 wins, bowl eligible. I'm like, thanks, you're fired. That's what I'm doing. Figure it out, man. And you didn't. Now, I'm talking about at rando, wherever university program, at Florida. What if you don't figure it out at Florida? And credit Billy Napier. At least there was a 13th game. Not with Mario. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back, wrap up next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
There's nothing to clarify. You know, I don't watch basketball coaches' press conferences. I've never watched basketball. How many years have I been coaching? Never watched one. Never listened to what other people say. You know, that was strictly about our program and what we do. I had nothing to do with anybody else. I don't make any comments about anybody else. And we hope the basketball team does really, really well.
A lot going on there. Nick Saban talking about comment he made regarding Tony Mitchell, the freshman defensive back, who just my reading of the details, once the details were available, when it was just the headline that was available, freshman arrested for marijuana, I was like, all right, run some stadiums, make him vomit, you know, a few times, and he'll be on the team. Then I read the details. I was like, I don't think that's true anymore. But Nick Saban included, there's no such thing as wrong place, wrong time. He made a choice, and he was talking about choices and bad choices, et cetera, and there you go. There's a lot that Nick Saban just said that I've always known to be true with him. He's not a petty, small person. In the least. And here's the thing. Like I've always said about Steve Spurrier, for instance, and I mean this. There are folks who never, ever liked Steve Spurrier. I don't know anybody who accused him of being a cheater. Like Spurrier always struck me as a guy who he wouldn't want to win that way. And when I was growing up, I was like, oh, that's silly. You want to win any way possible. And then you grow up and you're like, okay, I get it. Saban has always, he's never been petty or small like that. I also know that Nick Saban, here's the contradiction, he's always been very intentional with his words. So there's that, and that was his comment. Dan, how's your Friday going, brother?
You know who's self-righteous in sports?
Who that?
Losers.
Yeah.
I mean, it just really is the truth. I mean, look at everybody with the Astros in Major League Baseball. Oh, I can't believe they did. Ooh, George Springer's a free agent. Oh, I'd like to have him on my team. It's funny how your principles go out the window pretty quickly when you want to win ball games, right? But, you know, that's human nature, I guess. It's funny. The salary figures have been announced with Brandon Streeter and also with Daryl Dickey coming on as analyst at Georgia. And this is something that we've touched on a little bit before is – I've always said that coaches have egos, and there's an ego of, hey, give me that player. I can take him. Then there's the other side of the ego of, no, they fired me. They're going to pay the majority of my salary. And that's why they take these analyst and consultant jobs, is because that's exactly it. When they get the phone call from Kirby to say, hey, come help us break down film, do some off-field work, do all those different types of things. And eventually down the line, kind of the Mike Bobo treatment right here, if somebody moves on and there is an opening for an on-field role and I like you enough, then that possibility exists inside our program. But more than anything, it really comes down to that. They get a chance to be a coach. And yes, they're not the on-field coach, but still, they're in a program. They're around the game. They're able to off-the-field coach players and do all those different types of things. But more importantly, that nice, hefty salary that the team that told them, we don't want you anymore, is still paying them, it's still in their mind of saying, hey, you know, we're thinking of paying you this much to be an analyst. Let's lower it a little bit because I want them to pay the other part of it. I want them to pay most of it. And again, it comes down to ego.
Yeah, Daryl Dickey's a guy that I've always been a fan of, and he's got a much more of a hopscotch sort of route than even, for instance, like Kirby Smart, who kind of found some permanence and has now hired Daryl Dickey. But he was the guy that sort of he was on the block, and he had been quarterback's coach until last year, and then he started coaching tight end and didn't call plays. But he had been the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach, and there is no quarterback's coach for a Jimbo team other than Jimbo. It was his title. I never thought that there was an OC other than Jimbo, and I looked around going, I'm not exactly sure what you're doing. So it was a whole lot more responsibility that then later got assigned to him.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.